You're listening to the Functional Nerds Podcast with your hosts, Patrick Hester and Tracy Townsend.
And Tracy, we are back. It's a Saturday. We are recording and we have a great guest today.
We really do. I was saying in the green room, and it got us off on like a real tear where we'll have to kind of return to the conversation later, that currently Deirdre, my daughter, I'm probably both her favorite and least favorite human in the world right now. Because favorite, because I've booked her favorite author, who's Marie Lu, which is fantastic. And she was super duper looking forward to running downstairs and like bombing into the podcast episode and stuff. Least favorite, because it dawned on her and her charitable heart this morning that if she didn't go to grandma's house to put grandma's Christmas tree up this weekend, it probably wouldn't happen before Christmas. And so she made the very brave and generous choice to give up bombing Marie Lu to instead go put up grandma's Christmas tree. So Deirdre sends her regards.
Wow, that is the sweetest thing in the world to do of your daughter. So I think that's an amazing use of her time. And I love that she's setting up her grandma's Christmas tree. So Please give her all my love. I'm so grateful that she likes my books.
Now, another tradition other than setting up Christmas trees, in the Townsend household, they have a tradition of evil uncles.
That's true.
And to cement for all time that I am the ultimate evil uncle, I need Tracy to text Dee and tell her that Patrick has forbidden her to mention that Dee loves Marie Lu's books.
Amazing. I'll have to do that later because my phone is upstairs so that it won't interrupt the pod. But sure, why not? We'll heap the insult onto injury. I do sort of feel like the whole Deirdre sends her regards thing is, it feels, there's something vaguely like sinister and mafioso about that phrasing, which I guess kind of works for Red City.
She's going to rule the world one day.
Also kind of in she tune is. With with Dee's whole thing. So you have a new series, The New Alchemist, and Red City is the first book in it. It came out in October. And the description is The Godfather Meets the Magicians, which is fascinating in and of itself. But this has a new layer to it for Marie Lu fans because it's your first adult debut. Well, adult debut and first, they mean the same thing, right?
Yeah.
I am, of course, full of questions, but the first of them really is, what is the Red City experience, especially for people who have not read Marie Lu before?
Yeah, I guess, I'll give like the little elevator pitch for it. Red City is my adult debut. It is a dark contemporary fantasy, and it is set in an alternate version of Los Angeles called Angel City, where alchemy is real and it is controlled by these very powerful syndicates. This is like the Godfather part of it coming in. And it follows the story of these two young people named Sam and Ari who grow up as childhood best friends, but then end up on being recruited into these rival syndicates and trained to be alchemists and end up like on opposite sides of this growing magical war. It is, if you've never read my stuff before, I do lean dark. I've always loved fantasy sci-fi with a slightly dark slant to it. So that's what it is. But, at its heart, it is a love story. But it's about love in all kinds of forms. So it is romantic love, but it's also toxic love and familial love and the complications of, you know, the parent-child relationship and love for yourself and just kind of wanted to tackle all of these angles of love and pairing it with like power and corruption and all of that. So
I feel like readers who loved Fonda Lee's Jade City books would probably find themselves landing in Red City pretty comfortably.
I hope so. Yeah, I'm embarrassed to say I've never read Jade City, but I've actually heard it compared to Jade City a lot. So and that is a huge honor because I think Fonda Lee is amazing. I hope if you like Jade City that you'll like Red City as well.
That's fantastic. So this is a different approach to the same kind of question, and I think it's kind of related to a conversation that we halfway started in the green room and then I went, no, we're not allowed to talk about this. We have to wait on this for the pod itself. We're going to use up all our good stuff just chatting. But I have often, with my own students, given the advice of, like, you should write the thing you wish you could read. Mm-hmm. Like, the thing that maybe it's not out there already in some way, or if it is, you want to be a part of that kind of conversation. And so I'm curious for you, especially crossing that Rubicon into something that is not just readable by adults, but intentionally designed for adults. Mm-hmm. What are the bits and pieces of Red City that make it the book that you wanted to read?
That's such a good question, because I took many years to figure that out. I think Red City is a book that's been in my head probably since I was a kid, and I just didn't even know it. Because Sam, as the main character, has a lot of traits that I gave her a lot of pieces of myself from when I was a kid. And I was an immigrant kid. My parents came over to the States in 1989 with like literally nothing except for some debt. And my mom was a waitress, and I have all these memories of growing up waiting in this like restaurant's broom closet. It was a nice broom closet. It had like a little black and white TV and a couch, and I was just sitting there and watch like cooking shows while my mom like finished up her shifts. I think a lot of my childhood experiences were shielded by my parents. You know, we were very poor, but I didn't know it. There was always food on the table, and somehow they made it work. And I had no idea how precarious that situation was until I was an adult and I started hearing stories. And so Sam as a character started appearing in my head maybe like 5 or 6 years ago. And she was, the first image I have of her was sitting in like a restaurant's closet. And that's how the story opens. I think I wanted to tell a story with magic and with kind of like dark academia vibes, but that also told the story of immigration and of being a person in a new country, paired with this idea of, you know, finding a better life for yourself, pursuing something better. I think a lot of fantasy is about that, about ambition and power, and that pairs so well with the immigrant experience and with trying to, you know, or just moving up a class, like just trying to claw your way out of, you know, like the struggles of life. So I hadn't seen that a lot in the way that I was picturing in my head, and I kind of wanted to tell it from that angle. So so Sam and Ari both come from that kind of background. Yeah.
Side note, I spent a lot of time in a small booth in my mom's bar.
Mentioning your mom worked in a restaurant, I was like, oh, I think we have like some shared memories. Yeah.
She, when we first moved to Fresno, her and my aunt worked as cleaning ladies at a hotel. Mm-hmm. And then they graduated to waiting tables. And then eventually mom was waiting tables, but in a bar. So like she was a cocktail waitress. And I would go after school, and there was like all the normal booths, but there was like this half booth that was right by where her station was. And that's where I had to sit and do my homework.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. That was also me in the corner of the restaurant too. Yeah. There was like a little table that people didn't usually use. And that was the homework table.
If I finished the homework, I got quarters to play Miss Pac-Man. So
nice.
and they had the cocktail table Miss Pac-Man. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you ever saw that. It was a table. So you were looking down at it, and there was a person on either end could sit there, and you could play Miss Pac-Man. Yeah, it was pretty cool.
That's pretty awesome.
Isn't it kind of crazy how you have an experience of childhood and you internalize it as your normal. And you compare those experiences against other people's experiences of childhood, and you realize like, oh, I guess if there is a normal, that wasn't it. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, like, it becomes so hard to imagine things as having been any other way. Like I wasn't a restaurant kid in the way that either of you were, but my dad was a salesman. And so my kind of formative years from like late elementary school all the way through middle school until the beginning of high school, my mom was working second and third shift at a hospital. And so she was just always gone. Or if she was in the house, she was asleep and on a completely different schedule than the rest of us. And then my brother and I, we would come home, and my dad, who was in sales, would need to go on sales calls. And particularly, he worked for a heating and air conditioning company. And people who want new heating and air conditioning stuff and you're going to come to their house and do the pitch and things, they don't want it done in the middle of the day. They want it done after they're home from work. So my dad would put in however many hours in an office in Chicago, and then he would come back out to the suburbs where we lived, pick us up, my brother and myself, and take us all over Chicagoland doing calls at people's houses. Yeah. And that would be like 5 p.m. until about 10 or 11 p.m., like five days a week.
Rough. Yeah, that's hard.
And because of the situation, like, people don't want you bringing your rando kids into their house. And so you had the booth and you had the broom closet. I had the back of the car.
Yeah.
And so he would just park the car in their driveway and leave the keys on. And we were allowed to start the engine once every hour if it went that long to either run the air or run the heat as needed. And it was just me with comic books and homework. And we have these like little backgrounds that sort of raise us and then they become part of these stories that we tell through other people, like you're doing with Sam.
Yeah. That's so interesting to hear. These like core memories of childhood, and they get kind of become these like pillars of who we grow up to be. And you have these like very, very clear memories of being in the back of the car doing, you know, these very specific things. And that kind of carries over, I'm sure, into the present. And, you know, if you have like a certain moment where you're sitting in the back of the car or something and it comes back to you, and and you don't know when how those memories kind of go into like various habits that you have or, you know, things that you do. And but it's so interesting to me hearing these stories and like what you said of how we all think, you know, as kids, our lives are the norm. Like that is what you think everybody's lives are like. And then you hear everyone's stories and they're all so different, but
you know, or until you go over to somebody else's house and it's different as a kid.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
I remember going over to a friend's house and he had every single G.I. Joe toy.
Oh my gosh.
That you could get. And he had them all on shelves. Like he collected them. And I'm just like, I have never seen this many toys in my life.
Yeah.
In someone's house. Like that blew my mind. And the other thing that was blew my mind was like you go over to someone else's house and they have completely different food.
Yeah. The food thing is interesting.
I don't know what this is.
Yeah,
Where's the cornbread?
I love that you brought up
food.
Where's
the cornbread? Where's the beans? I don't know what this is.
Well, I remember like going to school, everyone had like the brown bag, you know, just like what, the 90s. Like you bring like your sack lunch with the sandwich and everything. And my mom would always bring me these like leftover like fried rice or whatever in like this like little plastic bag. And I was always like, I just want like this like sandwich. And you know, now that I'm older, I understand that this was a far superior lunch, but you know, when you're like eight, you're like, I want like the kind of sad, you know, turkey and cheese.
Want to fit in?
Yeah, exactly. And so I remember just constantly kind of like clocking what other kids were doing around me or whatever it was like. I would see like families in like McDonald's. So McDonald's was another big one for me because like we were not allowed to go to McDonald's when I was super small because you know. It's kind of expensive, especially now, to go to McDonald's.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, and I remember that was a luxury. You know, it must have been, and I'm curious, Patrick, for you too, since you're a restaurant kid, like the first time that you like, go to a restaurant and it's to be a customer in the restaurant, because I have a really strong memory of that. And I remember we would drive, every now and then we would drive past like McDonald's and I would see like kids and I'm like, that must be just like the coolest experience. You know, you sit there with like your burger and your like happy meal or whatever. The first time I got to go to McDonald's, that was like a real treat. And the first time we got to sit down in like a real restaurant and be like served food, you know, that wasn't something that my mom made or like leftovers from the restaurant or whatever.
My story is a little different because my dad had a pizza place, is what we called it, in Chicago. Mm-hmm. It was basically an Italian restaurant, but it had it was called Sorrento's, and the main thing was like takeout. So it was like pizza, Italian beef sandwiches, that kind of stuff. When we moved to Fresno, my mom, my grandmother lived with us. So it was, you know, Grams and mom and me and my older brother and then mom's dog. And it was mom's dog. And I had the same experience as you, because mom would work at the restaurant, and she ended up getting she worked at the bar, and so she would get the night shift, and so then I'd be home with Grams, and in the morning I would go looking for something to take to school for lunch, and there would be half a French dip sandwich.
Yeah.
And so I would take that.
Yeah.
Or I'd come in and there'd be, at one point, like when she was working at one bar, there would be like a Subway sandwich in there, like a half a Subway sandwich. And I would take that. And I would eat these, whatever was in there, like I would take
Yeah.
But for us, it was like we would go to the restaurant where she was working. And like we would go there and we would eat because she would get a discount.
Right.
But the thing that Graham's always wanted – and started making us do on Sundays is we would go to Sizzler.
Oh, Sizzler. I have seen prime
rib, Sizzler. Yeah. They had a prime rib Sunday special, and Graham's wanted it. And so we would go to Sizzler on Sunday. And I was not I was not a big steak meat eater at the time. Like that was not my thing. And so we all had to get the same thing. We all got the special. Yeah.
Right.
And so I would always do, like, you got a baked potato with it. I liked the baked potato. So I would be like, yeah, give me the biggest baked potato. I'm like 10, 11 years old. I'm like, give me the biggest baked potato you have. Put as much butter and sour cream on there as you can possibly put on there. And I would just sit there and eat that. And they would both be mad at me because they're like, you need to eat the meat. You need to eat the prime.
Oh, my God. This is cracking me up so much. Because my parents did the exact same thing, but with Chinese food. Yeah. Like we would go to a Chinese buffet or whatever. And my mom would get so upset with me because she's like, why are you not getting the crab legs and like the fish or whatever? I just have this giant plate of like fried rice and noodles. She's like, that's the cheapest meal. She's like, get the expensive. Like, she would send me back for like, I'm like, I don't like crab legs. And she's like, you better eat your weight in crab legs. So I find that hilarious. Baked potato. Doing it right, seriously.
We discovered in Fresno, we discovered Sun Sun Kitchen, and that became our Chinese food place. We loved that place. But what I loved from it was not what anyone else wanted.
Yeah.
So, what did you get? We discovered that you could bring a pot there and they would fill it with soup. Whatever the
what? Soup. Oh my
you
God.
Could just bring the pot.
New information to me.
Yeah, you could just
bring
the pot.
Was that like a thing that people could do, or this was like specifically for this restaurant?
Oh, I mean, it was that restaurant. I don't know about other restaurants, but like you, if you brought them a pot, they would fill that with soup and then charge you whatever, like, you know, for the pot of soup.
Oh, and I would live there and just
so
do that.
That's what they would do. I wanted egg foo young and I wanted white rice. And that was it. That's all I ever ate there. I would get white rice and I would pile it up. I would get my own little thing of white rice and I would get a little thing like four patties of vegetable egg foo young because I didn't want shrimp. I didn't want chicken. I just wanted the veggies. And I would put that on my plate and I would put the egg foo young on there. And that's what I ate.
Nice. That's some real comfort food.
My mother insane.
I bet.
She's like, we're getting the soup for everyone. Well, I want the egg foo young and rice. Yeah. We're getting the soup because you can get the big bucket of soup for like $9 and it feeds the entire family.
You're like,
and I'm like, but I want the egg foo young and the white rice. Yeah. Every single time.
Yeah. Oh, I love that.
For that's about my son's in college now. He just started in the fall, but for a year before that, a little more, he had a part-time job at the local family-run Chinese restaurant, and he had two qualifications that allowed him to get this job.
I love these qualifications.
Qualifications one was that he had previously worked at a different restaurant that had to let him go just because they weren't getting enough business and they couldn't justify keeping him on and they weren't giving him hours anyway. So a little bit of restaurant experience. But the primary qualifier was he spoke English because the family it was an entirely family run business. And the only people who spoke English in the family were the three children, each of whom had just graduated and gone off to college themselves. And oh, so previously, okay. the children had after school gone to the restaurant mm-hmm. and helped their parents run the business and were actually nominally co-managers of the restaurant with their parents. Mm-hmm, but mm-hmm. they were all gone now, except for breaks right. and whatnot. So they needed to get some English. I mean, they spoke just match. Enough English to be able to get by,
yeah.
but not yeah. really enough to be able to interact smoothly with their customers. Right. And so we happened to be picking up an order for ourselves one day when I saw the help wanted sign not too long after my son had been let go from his other job. And I was like, you know, you love the food at this place. And right. so why not? And he was delighted to discover that because they only needed him for his ability to speak English and work with customers, that he could just sit on a stool by the register and wait for phone calls because it was exclusively a carryout place.
Right. Oh, that's pretty
and
sweet.
So he would like do his homework or yeah. like read comics. He had a Marvel Unlimited subscription on his phone. And so he'd read comics on his phone and just wait for the phone to ring. And they also paid $4 an hour more than the other place had. So it was win-win. But man, by the end of that like year and a half of that job, you never met a white boy who knew more about Chinese food. like the first day of the job, they sent him home with the menu, which had more than 250 items on it.
Man. Oh, dang.
It was a massive menu. And they specifically circled all the noodle sections. And they were like, you need to memorize the difference between all these noodles. There will be a test. And there was.
More about those
there was a
me.
Written yeah. test Jeez. On noodles.
They're serious.
No, they meant it. They were like, look, you have one superpower. It is English. You're not going to mess up the noodles. Because I guess the primary thing that people were mad about was they would order one type of noodle because they don't understand the nomenclature and get something they weren't expecting.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I have a question for Marie. So your mom working in restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
My mom worked in a restaurant and then my dad had the place in Chicago. When I was like 11, 12 years old, I spent a summer with my dad and I ended up helping out the restaurant, like doing busboy stuff.
Oh, nice.
When I was back in California and, I'm now 16 and I'm looking for a job. My mom said I was not allowed to work at her restaurant. She did not want me there. She did not like the people there. And she's like, you cannot work here. Any experience like that? Like, were your parents like, no, we want something. You can't work here. You got to do something different. You got to find some other job.
Well, I mean, this is kind of like, it's become like an Asian stereotype. But I had like three options that I could choose from for a career. And it was to be a doctor, a lawyer, or an engineer. And I think computer science was coming up at the time. So also you can throw that in there as well. And so to the point where I would be like, I mean, I was a creative kid. I love video games and books and, you know, art and all of that. And so I was like, Mom, I love to draw. And she's like, you can become a plastic surgeon. That's like being an artist. And I'm like, she could turn anything down those three paths. So I got a lot of that, which I think maybe is in a similar vein of like, you know, we have something ordained for you. And I understand, you know, now that I'm older, I understand where that's coming from, you know, like when, you know, especially since we were kind of new to the country, they just wanted to make sure that I wasn't going to be in trouble when I grew up and they wanted something stable for me. And so I understand where that was coming from. But did you rebel against that at all? Like, were you like, I am going to work at this restaurant?
No. But then actually the restaurant where she was working brought in like new ownership and management. Mm-hmm. So the people who owned it brought in partners and they completely rebranded the whole restaurant. And part of that was they told the original owners, none of your family can work here. And they kicked them all out.
Wow.
And so they made Mom the general manager and they brought in all these new people. And she looked at me and she's like, you know what? You can work here now if you want for the summer. And I was like, okay. And so then I got a job there as a busboy. And one of my best friends, I told him that they were hiring busboys. And so he got a job there too. And we were both busboys there.
That's
for
awesome.
For that summer, that year or something. So I did end up working there. And then she's like, similar to your mom, she's like, you know what? You like computers and you are doing all this coding. Because I had a Tandy color computer too. And that had hooked up to a black and white Curtis Mathis TV. That was my monitor. Nice. And she's like, you like that. And I think you should learn that. So what I want you to do is I want you to call your aunt and uncle and tell them that you want to work for them. Because I want to be with their eldest son who went to school for this stuff. And he's going to teach you things about computers.
Oh, wow.
And so I called my aunt and uncle and they had a business. And my uncle said, no, I don't want any family working here. We're not going to do it. And then I think what happened was my aunt had a conversation with him and he completely changed his mind the next day and I was hired.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And so I started going there after school and my cousin started teaching me computer stuff as I'm working for them, which was, you know, as Tracy knows, it was an HVAC wholesale supply company.
Okay.
So her dad would have bought stuff from us.
Yes.
Right.
If we were in the same state. But yeah, that's when I started learning Unix.
Oh, wow.
Which was a completely different code base and everything.
Yeah.
So what I'm hearing here really is that family business is essentially the syndicate format is what we're getting at here.
Like, I love how full circle
to the book.
I love how opinionated your family is about whether or not you're working for one specific business or not. They're like, no, absolutely not. Wait a minute. Yes.
And here's a hilarious connection. So that original family owned the Italian restaurant in Fresno. It was called Luigi's. Mm-hmm. Their cousins owned a different Italian restaurant called DeChico's.
Oh.
And DeChico's was more successful. And they had three or four locations in Fresno.
That makes Thanksgiving awkward.
Fast forward.
Tension.
Fast forward to Colorado. One of the cousins has DeChico's here out by the airport. Oh. And when my mom moved here, and she was feeling, you know, she was missing California and missing everything. I found out there was a DeChico's here and I took her there. And so we kind of had that Fresno Italian food experience of DeChico's.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I went full circle.
Yep.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. All right. As far as I know, they're still here. They're out by the airport, Tower Road.
So we've managed to... We've managed to like really dive deep into a lot of the childhood imprinting stuff there. One of the childhood imprinting things, though, that we did talk about a little bit, and I think we can sneak this in before we do picks, maybe, was kind of along the lines of like what went into writing the book you would want to read. There's also like what's the book or books or author that got you into wanting to read, wanting to write, wanting all of this stuff. And Patrick, you had Encyclopedia Brown as an answer, but I don't know that we got to you, Marie.
Oh, we could talk for like hours about, you know, nostalgic childhood memories of books. I have, I guess, like two major markers in my childhood that I can remember. One was like learning to love to read in general. I was a huge horse girly. I was obsessed with horses. I remember my parents would send me to Sunday school on the weekends. We weren't Christian, or my parents weren't Christian, but so they didn't go with me. They were just like, they would send me, they're like, this is what Americans do. They go to Sunday school. Yeah. So you're going to go to Sunday school because now we're Americans. I'm like, okay. And I would go, and I think you were supposed to memorize Bible verses. And if you memorized one, you would get a plastic horse. And so there were like 300 horses. And I was like, I'm going to get every single one of these horses. And I did. So I had this giant bucket of horses. And I remember being at the library. I basically like lived at the library when I was a kid. And I found this series called Misty of Chincoteague, which was like by Margaret Henry. And she wrote a bunch of other, you know, horse books. And the Chincoteague series was about the annual roundup of wild horses off the island of Assateague, which I think is off the coast of New York. And these kids that, you know, went and got like a horse from this roundup. And I was obsessed with Margaret Henry. I remember writing some fan fiction of that when I was like maybe nine, and about like horses in the Kentucky Derby. And I didn't even understand the Triple Crown, but you know, I knew it had horses in it, so who cares? And then the point when I got into fantasy and sci-fi was the other big marker. I was 11 And I discovered Brian Jakes at my school's library. And he's the author of the Redwall series. And that was my first exposure to any kind of fantasy series. The book was Madameo, part of that series. And I went down into this obsessively deep hole on the Redwall series, wrote fans.
I was waiting for you to say rabbit hole because Jake, but you know.
Well, I mean, I was also a huge Watership Down fan after that. So rabbit hole appropriate. And this was like back in my day, I hand wrote fan fiction of that. So I like had, you know, actual physical notebooks of my fan fiction of Redwall. And from Redwall, I found, you know, Tolkien and David Eddings and Robert Jordan and Jacqueline. I read Jacqueline Carey when I was like 14, which I really shouldn't have. She's like adult. And I didn't understand like 2/3 of that book, but I was like, I don't understand what this book is about, but I like it. And that was my gateway into all fantasy and sci-fi. So I'm bummed I never got to meet him in person.
I've told this story before on the podcast, Tracy, but it feels apt to say it now. I'm very like, even to this day, I'm very I make a list. I go in the store. I go and I get the things that are on the list.
Yeah.
And I don't wander.
That is so impressive. And teach me your ways.
That's completely not me.
And so even as a kid, I knew where the Encyclopedia Brown books were. So when I went into the bookstore, I had blinders on and I just went to that shelf.
Oh, wow.
And I would look and see like what was there. And that's how like I would see different things. And then I can't remember what I think it was like they rearranged things. Something happened. Ah. They rearranged things.
Oh, no. Crisis.
And I go in the store and it's not there. And but what is there is an entire shelf of Star Trek books.
Excellent.
And I went, I did not even know that these existed. And so I tell my mom and I'm like, Mom, there are Star Trek books. I need to get Star Trek books. And she's like, oh, okay. And I'm gonna show Marie like I've got Spock.
I love it. I love you, your mom. You're like, this is not a want, this is a need.
Yeah. I'm like, I need Star Trek books. And at this point, she was now a bartender at the bar at Luigi's.
Yep.
And she would tell her customers about her son who loved to read and that now he wanted Star Trek books. So at some point, this guy comes in and he sits down and he's got a box and he orders his drinks and he's like, here. And he slides the box over and says, this is for your son. And she opens it up.
Gosh.
And it's all of these Star Trek paperbacks.
Oh, what a gift.
And they've all been read. They're all used. But she's like, oh, okay, this is really cool. Thank you. And she brings that home to me. And now I had, and I still have to this day in a box, all of these paperbacks from Star Trek. And that started me reading Star Trek novels and the pocket editions. And then whenever I had money, I would go to that shelf and I would get a new Star Trek novel. And that's how I started reading Star Trek.
I love that so much. I love that you still have that box of books, and I'm jealous now because I don't have my old, you know, beat up mass market paperbacks of all of my fantasies that I used to read.
I've never been able to get rid of them.
Oh, don't ever get rid of them.
Yeah.
That's just like nostalgic central. I've been actually on a quest recently to re-find the, you know, 80s editions, like beat up mass market paperback editions of all of my favorite childhood books. So I think your story has motivated me to find them. Yeah, I just found the right one for Madameo like a week ago. So I'm like, score is like $3 on Thrift Shop or whatever.
Sixth grade, I'm in Catholic school in Fresno, sixth grade. And I'm bored out of my mind in class. And the teacher recognizes this. What I did not know at the time is that I had tested out and that I should have been moved up a grade, but my mom wouldn't let me. So this teacher hands me a book and says, here, read this. And I'm like, what? And it was The Fellowship of the Ring.
Oh, wow.
And it was this really nice edition with this white cover on it. And it was just gorgeous. And when I finished that, she gave me the next one, you know, The Two Towers. Then she gave me The Return of the King. And but she would recycle those to me. Like I would reread those over and over again. And they were really nice editions. And like 5 years ago, somewhere in there, I went to Mile High Con and I saw that edition, those editions sitting on a shelf, and I bought them.
Did you get it?
I bought it.
Nice.
I never regret that. All weekend long at the con, and finally the last day I went up to him and I'm like, I want that. You know, like, let's make a deal.
Oh, I love that you got them.
Yeah. So I have those on my book. Priceless. Upstairs. Yeah.
Oh, that's so great.
That is perfect. Yeah.
Know what you want.
Yeah. I think it's picks time.
Picks time. Yay.
We'll get to picks of the week in just a second. I wanted to take a moment to say it's been 3 years. 3 years since anyone has given us a star or a review on Apple Podcasts. And that's just insane. So, if you like what we do, please take a couple of minutes, go over to Apple Podcasts and give us a star and maybe some kind of kind words, like a review. And if you don't use Apple Podcasts, no worries. Take those same couple of minutes to give us a star and some kind words on your favorite podcast catcher or platform, whatever that may be. It really does help. Now, back to what you really wanted to hear, picks of the week.
All right. So, picks of the week, gosh. I guess I'll start this time. Usually I kick it over to Patrick first. But so as I've mentioned many times before on the pod, I'm not great at television, but most of the television I do watch, I end up watching with Deirdre. And mm-hmm. so Dee and I have a shared love of Michael Schur sort of joints when it comes to comedy. And she has fallen in love in an entirely pure intellectual and platonic way with Ted Danson. This is largely because she was obsessed with The Good Place. It was one of her pandemic watches with me when she was really too little to be watching The Good Place, but she just latched on.
That's such a good show, though.
Right. Yeah. So in any case, when Man on the Inside came out in 2024, she was very excited and got very into it, watched the first season of it in a big binge with me, and was delighted because it was not just more Michael Schur sort of offbeat, heartfelt, whimsical comedy. It was also a Ted Danson-led one. And so it kind of checked all of her boxes. And Man on the Inside season 2 came out just a couple of weeks ago. And in what is, for me, pretty uncharacteristic, because I don't tend to park myself in front of the TV for long periods, we did all of Man on the Inside season 2 in 2 days.
Wow.
And we had such a, I mean, it's such a smartly built series for people who are not familiar with it. It is streaming. It's on Netflix. They do drop the full season at once, but the episodes are just barely over 30 minutes. So they're still composed as if they were a network television vehicle.
I love that.
And I think that helps because there's a lot of sprawl that sometimes happens in made for streaming series these days. Mm-hmm. Like, yes, we're only going to have 8 to 12 episodes, but those 8 to 12 episodes might each almost be a feature in and of themselves. Mm-hmm. And so it has this like perfect sense of pacing and restraint. And for those of you not familiar with the concept, Man on the Inside stars Ted Danson as a retired and widowed man named Charles Neuendyke, who is a little stuffy, but well-meaning and very earnest, who in the first season ended up assisting a private investigator who had a case that was situated in a retirement home in San Francisco. And he ends up becoming the man on the inside when he works for her essentially as a spy, taking up a position as a resident there in order to investigate the robbery that happened. So that's the first season. The second season, Charles is still working with Julie, the PI, but this time there is a blackmail and extortion case that's happening on a local private college's campus. And as Charles is himself a retired professor of engineering, he's the perfect plant to put in on this one. So he comes in as a visiting professor of engineering to investigate the extortion scheme that's being executed against this college.
Nice.
I gotta watch this. This sounds really fun.
It's very sweet. It's very fun. The first season is 8 episodes. The second season is 8 episodes. They're all about 30 minutes apiece. There's a lot of Michael Schur drawing from people he's worked with in the past in other things before. Like you'll see some Brooklyn Nine-Nine people. You'll see some Good Place people. Like, cool. Lots of folks who he likes working with are given roles of various kinds. And so it's in the second season, Mary, the heck is Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio? His, like, Ted Danson's actual wife is in the second season. Mary Steenburgen.
I was going to say, yeah.
No, yeah. Yeah. So she's in the actual, she's in the second season with him, and they have, unsurprisingly, delightful chemistry. So it's just such a fun watch. So if you're looking for something that's wholesome and fun and it's slightly transgressive, but in cute ways, Man on the Inside is a good place to go. And season two just came out.
Sweet.
I'm going to have to watch it.
I've been listening to other things during the day just to get away from the news. And one of the things I was listening to is Rich Eisen, who's a sports guy. But he did an interview with them about that show. And you can find it on YouTube. They were delightful. They really are.
Yeah.
All right. I really watched this.
So Marie, how about you? What's a pick?
A pick. And this is like anything that's just bringing me joy
right
now.
Absolutely anything.
All right. I'm going to pick a book and then I'll pick like a random thing. So, because there's always a book bringing me joy. I think that the book that really brought me joy this year was Legends and Lattes by Travis Baldry. I was kind of late to the Legends and Lattes train because I was always like, high stakes. I need high stakes. And if you haven't, for those who haven't heard of the book, Legends and Lattes is a low stakes, high fantasy. About this orc who has basically hung up her axe from, you know, battling and has decided to open a coffee shop. And she just opens this random coffee shop in a fancy kingdom and basically tries to make this coffee shop work. And I had never read cozy fantasy until that book. And, you know, I had a bunch of friends who kept recommending it to me. And I was like, I don't know. I don't even drink coffee. So finally I picked it up and I was just like, oh, this is exactly what I need in this day and age. I just want to see this like orc finding herself while she makes her coffee shop successful. That book brought me in a surprising amount of joy this year, and is completely not the kind of stuff I read. I tend to read like, you know, like dark, menacing stuff. So that was nice. And then other random pick of the week. So at my kids' school, they do this like annual gala auction thing to raise money for the school. It's this local public school. And so people will donate all kinds of interesting random stuff. And so we were bidding on a milk frother. I have never heard of a milk frother. It's literally just like a thing that froths milk. And I was like, we are never going to use this thing, but there's everything else is bid up too high. Can we, like, we're going to try for this milk frother because we're losing all the other bids.
Primed by Legends and Lattes.
Clearly, these two things are linked, right? Because this did come after Legends and Lattes. So I was, like, in this bidding war with some other random family for this milk frother. And it got to the point where, you know, you're in an auction. You're just like, I don't even know. Like, this thing is clearly not worth this price, but I need the thing. Because
must
we need
win.
To win this right, for the school. So we ended up, like, winning this milk frother. And it just sat on our counter for, like, 6 months. Because I was like, what am I going to do with this thing? And then finally the weather turned and it got cold and we finally used it. I was like pouring through this manual, struggling to figure it out. And then once we figured it out, it made the most magical cup of like hot chocolate that I've ever had in my life. It was like this like frothy, creamy, rich, you know, thing. I was like, oh my God, this is like the best invention in the face of the planet. And we're just like, what else can we froth? And so we're just like
froth on everything.
We're just froth. Yeah, I'm like, what else do we need froth on? Let's put it on some tea. Put it on
froth of broth.
Yeah, froth. Put soup in it. Like, this is what happens to it? Oh, it was great. I love that thing.
That's amazing.
There's a thing.
Highly recommend it.
There's a thing that is done somewhere in Europe. And I sent this out to a few people, a few of the patrons via Instagram Reels. But it was they take like a cup of Guinness kind of thing, and they have this thing that they heat to 1,000 degrees, and then they stick it in the Guinness. And what it does is it ends up creating like this marshmallowy foam from it.
I've never heard of that.
Sounds very familiar to this, like frothing. Right? But it's like a tradition they do every holiday season, and people apparently just adore it and love it. So
I could totally imagine why. Yeah, they should do that all year long.
Yeah, My pick is going to be really quick and simple for you, Tracy. It's the post Thanksgiving, pre-Christmas season. And for me, the thing that always brings me back to my childhood and that I enjoy really, really a lot, and I will listen to 100 times between now and Christmas easily, is a Charlie Brown Christmas album
from
the Vince Gagliardi Trio.
Mm-hmm.
I mm-hmm. love that album. I listened to it the day after Thanksgiving, and I've listened to it a couple times since. I just mm-hmm. love that album. I've always loved it. I just recommend it. Like, just go get it. Go listen
Fantastic.
To it. You don't have to watch the show. Yeah. Just listen to the music. The music is amazing. Mm-hmm. Just go listen to it.
Charlie Brown. The music is what makes Charlie Brown Christmas so great.
It is.
So,
yes.
It is.
Yeah.
That's what we're here for.
I love that.
All right. Well, holy hell. We did it. It's an episode. Marie, where can people find you, find all your cool stuff, the stuff that you're doing?
Yeah, well, I am online at marielou.com, which apparently has an issue right now, but it'll be fixed maybe by tomorrow. So once it's up, you can go there. And I'm also on Instagram, kind of on and off, at marielou, the writer. Those are my two spots online.
Nice.
So I hope to, I hope you guys check out the books and hope to hear from y'all online.
Fantastic. Well, thanks so much for being with us, Marie.
No, thank you guys so much. This was so much fun. And now I've got things to watch and, things to try out. And
it's like good homework.
This is the best kind of homework, truly. Well, thank you guys so much. This is so much fun.
Thank
Absolutely.
You. Hey, thanks for listening to this episode of The Functional Nerds. We really appreciate it. If you liked this episode, or really any of our episodes, please consider backing us over at patreon.com/functionalnerds. You can get access to some cool stuff and help us to keep the lights on. You can also show your support by mentioning us and sharing any of our episodes on your own social channels to help boost the signal. Trust me, that can be huge.
Mr. Carpiers,
you got it right. How about that?
Yeah.
You can call me Cannoli Joe.
Hello, Cannoli Joe.
If you've never listened to the podcast, there's two different styles here. There's Tracy, who does prep work and comes up with some very thoughtful questions. And then, oh, squirrel.
Oh, for God's sake, Patrick Louise.
Hello, Patrick. It is I, Clayface.
Okay. That's probably a good enough signal.
When someone comes up to me and says, hey, I really love what you do, I'm like, I'm sorry, do you know who I, I think you have me confused with someone else.
The whiz bang and the gosh wow and the sense of wonder stuff.
My favorite thing about time travel is I actually had a time travel joke for you guys, but you didn't like it.
I'm so excited.